So in 1923, a meeting was held in a hotel in Chicago. And there were nine people who were attending this meeting. And they were the most powerful men in the U.S. at that time. And these nine people, their net worth was more than the wealth of the U.S. government at that time. That's how rich and powerful these people were. And I can name some of them. There was the head of the New York Stock Exchange. There was a member of President Harding's cabinet. There was the wheat, you know, the grain dealer, one of the biggest ones, the head of the oil and gas company, the head of the utility company. Great businessmen, very, very successful. And nine of them met to discuss strategies, how they can make themselves more powerful, how they can combine their to make themselves more rich, more powerful, more successful. And the meeting ended. And let us see what happened to them 25 years later. I have the email if somebody is interested. But 25 years later, out of those nine people, three had declared bankruptcy. They had overspent their money and, you know, gambled their resources. Three of them committed suicide. Two of them went to jail for illegal activities, and one became insane and was admitted to an insane asylum. So these nine people, they had learned the art of living, how to make a good living, how to be successful in the world, how to work hard, how to make a lot of money, how to achieve a lot of success. But why did their lives end in failure? Because they had not learned the art of life. There's a difference between living and life. Schools and colleges, whether it's engineering or law or medicine or business, they will teach you how to live, how to make a good living, how to be successful, how to be a good businessman or a very successful lawyer or doctor or engineer or a CEO of a company. But no school will teach you how to be a honest businessman. A successful business, yes, man, yes, but how to be an honest businessman, how to work not only for personal pleasure, but my business should also serve society. They will teach us how to be a good doctor, but will not teach us how to be a compassionate doctor, one who cares about the patients. How to be a good lawyer, but they may or may not teach us how to be an honest and ethical lawyer and work for the benefit of the client. And no school or college will teach us that. And that is where the Bhagavad Gita and other texts like that come in. Because we all know, I think she was asking last time, you know, about living, you know, should we not have be financially comfortable? Yes. But in the process of earning and accumulating, these nine people had forgotten the art of life. Why are they working? Why are they earning? And what the Gita teaches us is how to be a compassionate, honest, sincere individual. How I can be a better husband, a better wife, a better child to my parents, a better parent to my child. How I can be a better member of the community where I am, a better member of my nation, a better member of this whole world. And how can I grow spiritually to know who I am, to become one with the divinity in me? Om or God or consciousness is in every one of us, but we do not recognize that. We do not know it, and that is the goal of Bhagavad Gita, to make us one with the spirit. And in that, knowing that, I become one with the whole universe, because the Lord is everywhere. Everything is the Lord alone expressing in different names and forms. So that is the essential message that Bhagavan Sri Krishna gives us in the Bhagavad Gita. So far, we have just finished the first chapter last week. I'll very briefly summarize, not go into too much detail, but as we saw, the war was about to start. The two armies were gathered. And Duryodhan was worried about his what is going to happen. And the war was declared by the blowing of conches from both sides, and both the armies were ready, just waiting for the time, opportunity. And at that time, Arjuna asks Krishna to take his chariot, which Krishna does in front of Bhishma and Drona. And right away, Arjuna is confused because he sees his grandfather, his teacher, his cousins, his uncles. And on both sides, he sees relatives, and he feels that this war is going to cause tremendous destruction, not only in the families, but the whole nation. So many young men will be killed, the families will be destroyed, there will be women without husbands, children without fathers. And when family culture is destroyed, the Samaj culture is also destroyed, the national culture. Women will be left without husbands, and you know, they will then, their purity, their morality will be corrupted. And the whole nation will go downhill. And he says, this war that we're about to undertake is a great sin, and I just can't do that. And seeing all this, his mind was shattered, his body was shaking, he barely could speak, he was weeping, and he dropped his bow and arrow and sat helpless in the chariot. And in the second chapter, that is when Bhagwan's teaching starts. I'll very briefly summarize what the second chapter is. The first few verses continue Arjuna's grief and Bhagwan's response. And then after the 11th verse, when the formal teaching starts, then the Lord covers the entire gamut of the Bhagavad Gita. Whatever I'm going to speak in the next 18 chapters are covered by him. So he talks about karma yoga, bhakti yoga, the path of service, the path of love for God, and the path of knowledge, and the path of meditation. All four are covered in brief in the second chapter. Also, the Arjuna's doubts of the first chapter are very systematically answered by the Lord in the first few verses. And then towards the end, he gives us the sthita prajna lakshanani, the hallmarks of a man of wisdom. So that is in brief the second chapter. So we shall start and see what Bhagwan tells Arjuna. Atha dvitiyo dhyayah. Sanjaya uvacha. Tam tatha kripaya vishtam. Ashrupurna kulekshanam. Vishidantam idam vakyam. Uvacha madhusudanah. So Sanjaya spoke. The second chapter starts with Sanjaya telling us, Tam. Who is this Tam? That. If you read the last verse of the first chapter, he says, Eva muktva Arjunas sankhye rato pastha upavishata visrija samsharam chapam shoka samvigna manasaha. So that Arjuna, who was the brave warrior, sat in the seat of his chariot, dropping his bow and arrow, and mind filled with grief. So that Arjuna, now he says Tam. So that same Arjuna, it's the second chapter is a continuation of the first chapter. So Tam, that Arjuna, Tatha, then Kripaya Vishtam. Kripaya means pity, self-pity. Vishtam means overcome by self-pity. And Ashrupurna, and tears running down his eyes. Can you imagine the greatest warrior of his time sitting there crying? And Kulekshanam, and his mind was agitated, confused. He just didn't know what to do. His mind was very disturbed. Vishidantam, he was despondent. He was in extreme sorrow. And Idam Vakyam Uvacha Madhusudana. Madhu was one of Krishna's name. Madhu was a demon and Krishna had destroyed him. We talked about that last week. So Madhusudana spoke these words. Idam Vakyan Uvach. So let us see a little bit about Arjuna's condition. And what describes him is self-pity. Kripaya Vishtam. What is the difference between self-pity and sorrow? I was reading another commentary on the Bhagavad Gita and the teacher there says, self-pity is when I feel sorry for myself. And sorrow is when I feel sorrow for somebody else, when I feel sorrowful. And that is an emotion of compassion, that's the somebody is suffering and I feel bad about it. Not bad enough that I also start crying with that individual, then I am no use to him or her. But I have compassion where it is now my duty to help this individual out of her grief or sorrow or problems. While self-pity is like that buffalo, you know, buffalo, when he sees some mud with little water in it, what we call kichar or muck, he rolls around in it and rolls around and his whole body is covered with that dirt and mud. So same way, we roll around in self-pity. You know, oh, I am such a miserable individual. I have so many problems. My mother did this to me. My father did this. My husband did this. My wife did this. My teenager did this. My boss did this. My neighbor did this. So we are all the time feeling sorry for ourselves, for what others have done to me. And we just revel, we enjoy that. Some people so like self-pity that when they meet anybody, you ask them, you know, how are you? You know, when you say, how are you? He's just supposed to say, I'm fine, right? But suppose he starts saying, you know what? I woke up today and my wife, she was angry with me. She shouted at me and my teenager didn't want to talk to me and my boss has been bad and I'm been fired from my job. Why did I ask him, how are you? I just want. So such people just feel sorry for themselves, and that was Arjuna was doing, you know, just feeling sorry for himself. Yeah, he has compassionate for the others too. But how am I going to fight? What am I going to do? What a big sin I'm going to commit. So this I was there, and he was at this moment in total neurotic condition, total anxiety neurosis, where his brain was not functioning. He was sitting on the chariot crying, and Krishna could have, you know, put a hand on his shoulder. Yeah, I know you are sad, but Krishna knew that's not going to help. That's only going to worsen it. So what Krishna said, this person needs shock treatment. He doesn't need compassionate words. He doesn't need honey words. He needs words that are harsh, that are sharp, that will wake him up. Because sometimes that's what we need. We need shock treatment. I just attended an ACLS class yesterday. And they say that when the heart is fibrillating, where absolutely there is no, you know, there's just electrical activity. There is absolutely no muscle functioning at that time. Is what we call electromechanical dissociation. You have to shock the heart. And so stop it for a moment. And then the AV node takes over and then the heart starts beating normally. So sometimes that is required to resume normal function. So similarly, at this moment, what Arjuna needs is not soft, loving, compassionate words. He needs shock treatment. And let us see what Bhagwan delivers. It's very interesting. These two verses are very, very powerful. Almost you can hear the anger in Krishna's voice. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Kutastva Kashmalamidam.
Kutastva Kashmalamidam.
Vishame Samupasthitam. Anarya Jushtam Aswargyam. Akirti Karma Arjuna. So Bhagwan is surprised, astonished, and also a little bit angry. It is kutaha, from where? Fifth case Bhagavan has used, from where tva kashmalam idam, this confusion, from where has it come? This confusion, this, you know, lack of understanding, this foolishness, vishame, right at the time of when we need it, when there is a great problem, when there is a great difficulty, samupasthitam, and suddenly this, from where did this confusion arise? Because Arjuna, when he went to the battlefield, he was very clear. He took his Gandiv, his bow and arrow, he was sitting in his chariot. He tells Krishna, take me to the middle of the battlefield. I want to see who are these enemies that I'm going to fight, or who are these evil people. And now suddenly, right at, see, it's like the two teams, you know, the football, the two teams are like a team travels to another town. And when they right in front of the game, when they're ready, they say, oh, these people are bigger than us. And these people, I don't know if we can win them. They have a better record. And they just give up, you know, or they look at their previous history. Last time they had beaten us 27-0, you know, so all those things happen. So then you don't perform. So similarly, at this moment, Arjuna is confused. He says, from where has this confusion come? And this behavior of yours is anarya. It's a very, very powerful word. Arya means a person who is noble, a person who is does the right thing, a person who does his duty, the person who is ready to sacrifice for society. So he says, what you're doing is not noble. It is not worthy of you. You are one of the great kshatriyas, a king. You are a descendant of a great dynasty. And for you to do that, it is unworthy. Anarya jushtam aswargyam. And you are saying it will take you to heaven? It will not. By running away from the battle, you are not going to go to heaven. And it is aswargyam. And akirtikaram. And it will bring you, kirti means fame, akirti means infamy. So it will make you infamous. It will make your reputation ruined. And all these three words, anarya, aswargyam, akirtikaram, Bhagavan explains in the subsequent verses. But here he just very briefly says, these are the qualities of what you are going to do. What will be the result of this action? You want to run away, you want to go to the forest, give up the battle. These are the things. It will make you unworthy of your being an arya. It will make, not give you heaven, will give you hell, and will make you infamous. So let us see the word Bhagavan. I had covered that a few months back. It's a very, very beautiful word. Bhaga means great glory, great wealth. So Bhagavan means one who has great fortune, good fortune, good glory. So Bhagavan is said to have, actually Bhagavan has million qualities. You cannot list them all. But these are the six main qualities that are listed in our scriptures. Aishwarya, I'll translate them. Aishwarya, Dharma, Yasha, Shri, Vairagya, and Moksha, Moksha or Jnana. So Aishwarya means lordship. So he is the lord of the whole universe. The whole universe, the moon rotates around the earth rotates around the sun. Because of the Lord's instructions, the rain falls, summer and winter come, everything, grass grows, trees grow, fruits grow, the wind moves, everything happens because of the Lord's lordship, because of his command, because he is the Lord of the whole universe. But see, lords, sometimes they become very arrogant or become very dominating. You know, if somebody controls everything, he becomes a dictator and starts saying, my wish will alone will work, and he crushes all opposition. Which dictators do. Anybody who opposes me is thrown in jail. The newspapers are shut down. TV is shut down. But Bhagavan does not have that kind of Aishwarya lordship. He practices Aishwarya along with Dharma. Dharma has many meanings. Here it means doing the right thing. Practicing his Dharma, doing the right thing. What is right in that situation is done by the Lord. And we see that when the Lord appeared on earth, when he came as Ramchandraji, totally followed the dharma of being a human, being a good son, a good brother, a good husband, a good ruler, a good father, all his duties he performed to the best of his ability. Even though he was the Lord himself, he acted completely like a human being and did everything that a human being should do. Bhagwan Shri Krishna, when he was the ruler of Mathura, it is said he used to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and meditate. Now he is the Lord of the whole universe. Who is he meditating on? He says, I meditate upon myself. Same thing Shivji one time, Parvati asked him, Bhagwan, you are always in meditation. Whom do you meditate on? He says, I meditate on myself. So Shri Krishna used to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, meditate, and then after that, you know, take a bath and then go do his daily duties. And then he would start, you know, his affairs of state. So he practiced his dharma exactly wherever he was, whatever the duties were. So similarly, the Lord practices his dharma, all his duties. Then the third is yasha. So the Lord's fame is not temporary. See, our fame is temporary. Like a president is famous for what, 4 years or 8 years. After about 10 years, you don't remember what Carter did or what the senior Bush did. No, nobody remembers. You know, they were presidents, good. Or Prime Minister of India, you know, Manmohan Singh or Lal. I mean, we don't remember hardly what they did. So they're only famous for a short while, but the Lord's fame is ever present. It is eternal fame. Then Shri. Shri means wealth. So wealth is that everything in this universe belongs to him because he is the owner, he is the creator. And if we are using it, we are just tenants. So to think it is my house, my property, my wealth, no. None of it is mine. It is a gift from the Lord. It is a loan. I use it. I use it to the best of my ability to make my family help my family and help society. And then when it's time to leave, thank you, Bhagwan. You gave me a good life. I'm ready to go. So having the attitude of a tenant, that I'm here as a tenant, nothing belongs to me. Even this body doesn't belong to me. It is a gift from the Lord. I have to serve the world with this body. And when it is time to drop, okay, time is over. Theek, I'm ready to go. So that kind of an attitude. So everything belongs to the Lord, but he has vairagya. He has detachment. But you and I, we don't. When we do something, see, you know, you see what I did? See what I'm going to do? All the time. The Lord does so much. And even when we succeed, it is he who is successful behind us. But he never claims the credit. He says, you go. And so we go around saying, you know, I did so much. This all thing is mine. Nothing belongs to us. No success is ours. Everything is the Lord. But he never claims that. He says, good, you claim the success. So that is called vairagya. Even Shri, he has wealth, and then he has vairagya and detachment. And then the last one is moksha or jnana, knowledge. Because all the knowledge comes from him. All the scriptures come from him. All the prophets, the teachers, they all come from him. You know, that's why we say Sadashiva Samarambham Shankaracharya Madhyamam Asmadacharya Paryantam Vande Guru Paramparam. So the original is the Lord himself, Lord Shiva. And then Shankaracharya ji in the middle. And then now is our Guru. So Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda is that. So I prostrate to the Guru Shishya Parampara. And that is the... So all knowledge comes from him. All scriptures talk about him. So why we are listing these six qualities? Because we need to develop them at least in a small quantity in every one of us. Develop dharma, the doing the right action, vairagya, detachment, knowledge, and have good qualities and good fame. So, and then have lordship, but not with the attitude of domination. So that is Shri Bhagavan. So what did he speak? His words were, as we said, very powerful. And like we said, anaryam. And this kashmaladam, at the right moment when you are supposed to face, when the whole country needs you, everybody is looking up to you, you are the best warrior on our side. If you are not there, there is no way we can win this battle. And everybody is looking, and it is a right war. It is not a war where you are trying to win property or when you... you are doing the right thing, you are here for the right purpose, and you are required. And at this moment, you are behaving like a anarya, as we said, unworthy, and a swargyam. A swargyam, why does he say that? Because it is said in our scriptures and also in Manusmriti that each one of us has certain duties. Like a Brahman who is a teacher has certain duties. You know, his duty is to teach, his duty is to do research, duty is to, you know, worship in the temples and, you know, maintain our Sanatan culture. The Kshatriya's duty is to lead the country, administer it honestly, sincerely. And so the leaders, the warriors, the generals, so they are the Kshatriyas. Then the Vaishyas are the business people and they are supposed to run the finance. And then the Shudras are the workers who work. You know, the janitors and the secretaries and the factory workers and the farm workers and the mill workers. So for a Kshatriya, as long as he's doing his duty, he, you know, of what? Protecting the country, fighting in a just war. And he says later on, he says, if even if you give up your life, you have given up your life in a just cause. And so for sure you will go to heaven. Because, but if you do not do your duty, if you fail from your duty, then not only in this world people will criticize you, but in other worlds also you will get infamy, you will go to hell. So he says, if you think that by running away from this battle, going to the forest to meditate, A, you are not going to get heaven. B, we are all born with certain vasanas, certain tendencies. In this chart, this BMI, I'll just summarize if some people don't know. With the body, I become a perceiver of objects. With the mind, I feel the emotions. With the intellect, I think the thoughts. So this BMI is me. That's what I think. And we are my vasanas or my tendencies. And Om represents the Lord consciousness. Now we are born with certain vasanas, certain tendencies, certain desires. And the reason we took birth is because we had unfulfilled desires which did not get fulfilled in this life, because of which I took birth. So the goal of life is to exhaust my vasanas as much as possible and not accumulate new desires, new vasanas. Whatever desires I have come with, exhaust them not by overindulging, but by right understanding and growing out of them. So a Kshatriya who is doing his duty honestly, sincerely, for the benefit of others, called Karma Yoga, he is slowly exhausting his vasanas. And as he is exhausting his vasanas, his actions become more pure, more honest, more sincere, and then he will go to Swarga, obviously. And not only that, but it will help him in his spiritual journey. So the goal of life is to exhaust vasanas. And the more we exhaust the vasanas, the closer we come to the Lord within us. What is a gap between me and the Lord is the ego, the I and my and the selfishness. So as I reduce that, I come closer to that reality. So that's why he says, aswargyam. It will bring you, not bring you swarga, will bring you hell. And akirtikaram, and people will say that Arjuna, he was the great warrior, greatest warrior, until when? Until the war broke out. That's when he ran away. And what is the use? It's like, you know, a wrestler or a boxer, you know, he's the greatest boxer in the world. Until when? Until he's put in the ring where he has to, then he, oh no, he doesn't fight, he gives up and, you know, surrenders or gets hurt quickly and goes. He said, nobody is going to remember why you left the battle, or nobody is going to say, oh, he was a great sannyasi. No, they will remember him, you as a coward. So this is the strong words of the Bhagwan.